Okay, folks, let's get back to our seats so we can continue and finish up. Okay. Miss Arawo?
No, actually, I'm Abigail Solis. I was called earlier.
Yeah, our card's in here.
Ah, okay. All right.
Great. My name is Abigail Solis. I am a community organizer for the Community Water Center of the Central Valley. And as the organizer there, I can stand here and tell you about the many families that we work with on a daily basis that are impacted by water, but we've heard that today. I do want to mention that our work at the center has shifted from just families to working with a lot of school districts that have this problem. School districts that are now faced with dealing with the task of how are we going to pay to supply clean drinking water to our hundreds and even thousands of students. And I'm sure you know this, or perhaps you don't, but California has the most number of schools without safe water in the nation. California. And it just astounds me to stand here and say this to you in 2012. Almost a shameful thing to say. And I think that we are all kind of under the misconception that this water issue is for the low income. I just want to say on a personal note, my daughter goes to a school that has water that is highly contaminated with arsenic. My daughter. So this means that every day when she goes to school, she must take an alternative source of water with her. If she forgets her bottled water, which kids do, this means two things. One, am I thirsty all day? Or two, do I drink this poisoned water? Now, no child should have to ask themselves this question. So I ask you this, what would you choose? What would you do? And lastly, I just want to say to a comment that was made earlier about how we've been whining about, you know, all morning about spending 3 or 4 years talking about this decision and how it's been too long and how he hopes that we would take at least this long. While we wait and while he thinks we whine, our kids and our students in our California schools are getting sick. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Now we have Karen Arawo?
Araujo.
Araujo. Okay.
A-R-A-U-J-O.
U-J-O.
I'm with the Unitarian Universalist Legislative Ministry. I'm a volunteer here on my own time and my own dime today because this is what my faith in action looks like. Thank you all for taking on this huge task, those of you who are paid staff, those of you who are volunteering to serve on this board. Mr. Wolf quoted earlier something about change, the difficulty of change. As Unitarian Charles Darwin said, it wasn't survival of the fittest that made a difference, it was the adaptability, how much we can change. That's what makes a difference. So this is a key moment for us here. We must be able to change. It's on you. You have a tough row to hoe because people before did not make the toughest decisions they could because of whatever pressure they endured or faced. $5 million in my neighborhood to provide safe water for the San Gerardo folks. This is only one group. If these statistics that were quoted earlier panned out throughout our area, about 60,000 people are at risk of drinking from contaminated wells. It's up to you. It's your responsibility, as you know, to protect the water quality. Please pass this. Vote on it tomorrow. We are always going to have more information. And if we're doing things correctly, we will have processes in place as exist here in this great proposal by the staff. They have mechanisms to address needed modifications and change. But it's in the doing that we're really going to learn what this is in practice. In the implementation, there will be innovation. We're going to be okay. We're going to be okay. Was that my time?
It was.
Please vote tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Reverend Lindy Ramsden, then Brad Snook, Joel Wiley.
Chairman, members of the board, I'm Reverend Lindy Ramsden. I'm the senior minister of the Unitarian Universalist Legislative Ministry, which coordinates collaborative ministries among our congregations in California. Last March, we hosted the United Nations Independent Expert on the Human Right to Water and Sanitation here in California. She was here to listen to communities and receive testimony, but she was also here to look at good practices that she could take back into the larger framework internationally, as all of us together are trying to figure out how to actually implement and realize the human right to water, to safe, affordable, accessible water for daily human needs. The problem of nitrates and unregulated groundwater is indeed profound, but just as California established new emission standards for cars, which have generated innovation and jobs, as well as cleaner air, I think California can take a leadership role in establishing a regulatory foundation as well as collaborative strategies to address this serious threat to our shared existence. I was concerned by Congressman Farr's testimony that San Gerardo might be an example of a success story. San Gerardo is unique. It's a cooperative, it has central meeting space, a talented manager, allies in government and the nonprofit sector. But $5 million later in taxpayer funds and $120 a month is not something that's sustainable. The story of the babies coming down in the river and the community trying to save them until they finally realize they need to go upstream and deal with the root causes is appropriate here. We can't deal with this community by community by community. We ask that you go forward with an ag order that sets a regulatory foundation that is usable, that brings in widespread data, that still allows for continued creative, collaborative effort and new information. Continuing to postpone a vote not only threatens community health, it displaces economic responsibility, burdening the most vulnerable, and it undermines trust in civic life. Thank you for your service. Thank you for the service of those in your staff who are dedicated to your mission. And thank you to all the farmers who are working so hard to figure out how to grow our food without damaging the gift of creation that blesses all of our lives.
Thank you for your comments. Brad Snook, Joel Wiley, Mr. Tomlinson.
My name is Brad Snook, S-N-O-O-K. I'm the chair of the San Luis Obispo chapter of the Surf Rider Foundation. Welcome to our county. I do want to state a little observation on the Farm Bureau, the CFBF presentation earlier. A little bit concerned that perhaps that information should have been brought in front of the board earlier. Was kind of questioning whether this was the time and place to bring out all that information. Surfrider values environmentally responsible agriculture. But who are the responsible ones? No one argues the existence of a problem. It's obvious that adoption of this graft agriculture order will help address water quality problems in our county. The Water Board has created a workable solution, and to delay implementation is simply ignoring the problems of mismanagement that got us here. To delay implementation will continue to put human health at risk, and potentially it could invite new risks. Please vote to authorize the ag order today or tomorrow. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Joel Wiley.
Good evening. My name is Joel Wiley. That's W-I-L-E-Y. I'm a CCA and been practicing crop nutrition for 33 years. And I see the proposal that's in front of you that you're asking to propose to and vote on is incredibly overwhelming. I've been doing this for 33 years, and it's like, wow, this is a pretty big project. There's going to be a lot of information that's brought up in front of you that the staff is going to have to address. I don't know how you're going to do it. The hydrology requirement as a CCA having that certification, I don't know if there's very many of those available in the state of California that have that certification. And I think you should look into that. That's something that's really an overwhelming certification that you're asking people to have if you want to include CCAs in this process. I am trying to figure out the tier process because I can identify a 1-acre parcel that has as much influence on groundwater that a 500-acre parcel would have, and that's a greenhouse. There's a lot of downward pressure from water with very little evaporation, and it just keeps pushing nitrogen down. So I think the tiered process is convoluted, and it's kind of complicated, and I can see why people have a hard time figuring it out. The last thing I want to say is that if you vote on what I would call the alternative ag proposal, Mark Los Huertos' proposal, there's a collaboration that I heard overwhelmingly pushed by our legislators. And then there's this question about creativity, and I don't want to see creativity stifled. And I think with allowing an alternative approach to what you're voting on potentially tomorrow, I think it's really important that we look at the alternatives. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Wiley. Mr. Tomlinson, then Ron Harbin or Harbin, and Gwen Pelfrey, William Pelfrey.
Rick Tomlinson, California Strawberry Commission. We support clean water. I have to rush through and correct the record on a few things. First, we agree with staff that most strawberry farms will fall into Tier 2. Our main concern with the tiers is that no matter what a strawberry grower does to improve water quality, most will always be stuck in Tier 2. In short, there is no carrot, there is no reward for doing more. A grower gets stuck and they stay in a tier. We agree with staff that a fertilizer cap of 120% is an achievable BMP for most strawberry farms. Not all, but most. However, we're concerned with the assumption to regulate use is an effective control of discharge. As we indicated in a previous hearing, research jointly funded by the Regional Board and the Strawberry Commission demonstrates that on average, most strawberry farmers already have adopted this BMP at 120% and combined with drip irrigation are not high risk to leach. In previous comments, we requested strawberries be moved to a lower designation. Staff showed a slide that indicated 20 to 40% of wells are affected by nitrate. Some of the previous Lawrence Livermore reports and USGS reports that staff have referenced indicate that the correct number in the Salinas Valley is 9%. Last year, we presented data on a groundwater analysis. The data shows that about 50% of small disadvantaged communities, those that are on systems that serve between 2 and 14 homes, are in areas with no commercial agriculture. Half of the affected wells are in areas with no farms. Staff described the Central Coast Vineyard Team SIP program that you can move from Tier 3 down to Tier 1 if you're a member of SIP. But then they also talked about the Farmers for Water Quality program that our reports weren't publicly available. They're not publicly available with SIP either. The criteria is not available. The audits aren't available. More importantly, the staff report doesn't even require them to be available. That's the type of different standard that is being proposed for Farmers for Water Quality versus everything else. So I'll just conclude, because I have to say this. I agree with staff that vineyards are low risk and that the SIP program is a good program. It's just I'm using it as an example to illustrate the difference in standard. Lastly, I'll tell you that Ventura has a coalition, and it's working great.
Thank you for your comments.
Can I ask him a question?
Go ahead.
Mr. Thomason, do you know off the top of your head how in this region how many acres of strawberries are under drip irrigation?
100%.
100%.
All strawberries are about. We only occupy about 6% of the land area, and they're all using drip. And the report that was jointly sponsored showed that. At the very beginning of the season, you have to move the salts away from the root zone, so away from that first 12 inches. And then after the plant gets established, you fertilize, and that's how we're able to achieve that 120%, because no plant can absorb 100%, right? There's inefficiencies there. That's just laws of nature.
I'm trying to think what the other question I had for you. Crop rotation. Mm-hmm. How many years does the strawberry farmer keep the present farm or present piece of land on strawberries?
Strawberries are constantly rotating. It's a 14-month crop. So you can't go back to back. So you're, I mean, you can, but you're going to cut your season short, and a few folks who own their land might do that. But most strawberry folks lease, so they're in a constant rotation with vegetables. So part of the goofiness of the tier system is 1 year that farm might be a tier two strawberry farmer, the next year it might be a tier three vegetable farm, and then next year it might be a tier one farm. That's going to change annually as the crops move through.
Is that the same owner? I mean, the same farm operator?
No, the landowners are who the knows where.
No, I mean the farmer.
No, all different farmers. Because the land is being leased, and so you're constantly moving farmers and crop.
You answered my next question, was that since you had a 14-month rotation, consequently, if there was nitrate contamination, it wouldn't necessarily be your crop or the crop before. It could have been several crops back.
That's the challenge. That's why we came up with the proposal that Dr. Los Huertos then elaborated on, is we were trying to figure out legitimately a way to clean up water and deal with our whole systems approach in farming. And that's why you hear so many people talk about how the tiering system is not going to achieve it. It looks okay on paper. Like I said, strawberry farmers are going to be tier two. It's doable. We can do it. But I don't know that you're going to get the results that you're looking for, and we don't want to be standing up here 5 years from now with a target on us.
And why would you be in tier two? If you're under drip, you have no runoff, you have very little percolation, if any.
Yeah, the average strawberry farm is 73 acres, so it's small. But so we're designated as high potential to leach, even though we have the study that says that's not accurate. Everything I've told you about the groundwater, the wells that are affected and where they're at and the study, all the most current reports are all consistent with everything I've said. There's nothing that you will read about later and find that, oh, there's new information and that changed.
Do strawberry farmers use diazon?
A small percentage, about maybe 2 or 3% of the acreage will use it, because some farms will plant and leave the plants in for 2 years. And if that pest pressure builds up, that's when they'll use it. And so I think that's where I said staff accurately characterized about five farms in Tier 3. I think, if they use chlorpyrifos or diazonon, that's going to put them in Tier 3.
Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
I have resisted previously, but speaking of things that you said, you just said no plant can be 100% efficient. And somebody else had referenced that earlier as if our staff proposal was requiring that. So you're not implying that you think the proposed order requires 100% plant efficiency, are you?
Not for strawberries, but I read certain crops that requires that.
You think the order requires 100% crop efficiency?
It says it. It says there's a cap for folks in Tier 3 on certain vegetables, that the most they can apply is 100%, right? So if a plant absorbs 100 pounds, the most they can apply is 100 pounds. But
are you referring to the 1.0 balance,
yes,
nitrogen balance ratio?
Yes.
As I recall, you reported in the workshop last year that you achieved 0.78 with strawberries.
Right. So that's right. So we achieved 0.78. So that's where, for strawberries, 120% is the number you need, right? If we're only 80% efficient, mm-hmm, or 78% efficient, you got to apply more than what you need. So that's where the staff correctly identified, and that I think it comes off the report, 120% is an appropriate number for strawberries. I think there are other numbers that you have for other crops that I don't know that they have the benefit of the type of study that we jointly funded.
Okay, I just want to clarify that the order does not require 100% removal of nitrogen by the plant. And we can explain that again if it's necessary.
I think that'd be helpful to explain. Like I said, for strawberries, I'm under the impression it's 120%, and it works for us. But I think I've read it to read for other crops. It does require a cap, and so I think that would be helpful.
We need to have that clarified.
Can staff clarify that? So
I think it'd be good now because it's on everyone's minds. They might not be here tomorrow.
Can you do it now?
I could do it now.
Go
and
ahead.
We have Monica Bardhartay here who can also try,
speak up. Speak up.
Try to assist with some more specific information. But and we do have some slides, but I'm going to try and refrain from pulling those up right now. So the nitrate balance ratio, Monica, correct me if I'm wrong, is the total nitrogen applied to a crop over the crop need. So on the bottom denominator, should I pull up the slide? Okay, let's go 1 second here.
Well, let me ask you this. Does the order limit how much nitrogen a farmer can apply to his crop?
No.
It does not? Hang on, please.
It doesn't specify that crops cannot apply more than so many pounds per acre, if that's your question.
Is there a limit to how much nitrogen a farmer can apply to his or her crop?
I agree that it's open to interpretation. Okay, but I mean we see it differently is basically what I'm trying to say. But let me show you, let me just bring this up and then we can talk about it.
May I make a comment, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
I've made this comment at previous hearings, but this is some of the issue that I think we've faced in the past is interpretation, because you have the staff saying one thing, you have other people saying the other thing, and I've said that instead of writing these orders in technical writings, it should be written in layman's language so the individual farmer or whoever we're dealing with can understand it. And it's obvious there's mass confusion over this one item. It's a very large item. I'm not going to say it's a small item, but it's a very important item for everybody. But now she has it up. But I think it's important that the language be very clear so everybody understands the best they can.
So let me start by saying that this requirement is staff is including this requirement to address this very severe groundwater quality conditions and to address the nitrate loading to groundwater to better protect drinking water. So the way you can do that is by tracking the inputs, right? The nitrate going on top of and going into the system, or monitoring the discharge, which is leaving the root zone. Staff agrees with the comments that it's very, let me not say very, it's more costly to measure the discharge as described by an earlier commenter. So if we can't measure the discharge, then we have to measure something else as an indicator to minimize loading. This nitrogen balance ratio is the total nitrogen applied over crop needs. Let me first say that this concept was developed in coordination with UC Cooperative Extension, as well as certified crop advisors and both representatives from our region as well as from Region 5. It's similar to the approach that's already in use in Region 5 for the dairy order. So the nitrogen balance ratio is the total nitrogen applied over crop needs. The grower determines that bottom denominator. They justify the amount that their crop needs. So, for example, if you're in a certain soil type, or if you have a tissue test, or if you can determine your crop need based upon that and provide that justification, that's acceptable. Another way to do it is you can use reference literature. For example, UC Cooperative Extension has information on certain varieties of lettuce of 120 to 140 pounds per acre, I think, Monica. So there's many different ways you can identify crop needs. The water board does not specify how much nitrogen the crop needs. The grower gets to provide that information. What we want to see is the amount that growers are applying relative to what they're saying their crop needs.
And so if that was strawberries, mm-hmm. I think the research would show that, in general, the crop needs 200 pounds. So that's 200 on the bottom. And so the 1.2 would result in the top number being you can apply 240 pounds. and that's a target. And so you run into, what does a target mean? What if you did more? And then also the crop needs part. I know, you know, so there's some varieties of strawberries, day neutral variety, in certain areas like Santa Maria where you have a really long growing season. And so you might really bump up against that 240. You might apply 250. And so that's one variety. We've got research that says 200, but what if that grower needs 210 or 220? And so that's where a lot of this uncertainty comes from. And then I think it gets just even tougher for some crops that are in the one.
Mr. Thomason, isn't another part of this equation the soil types?
Absolutely.
Doesn't that make a difference?
Well, yeah, as to, because that's going to define the crop needs. Any given crop, depending on soil conditions, climate,
soil variety,
oh, I see.
The climate,
okay, that's
the
all
region,
that's the crop needs.
That's
all right.
The bottom number.
Okay.
So the problem then is the ratio defined, either 1 or 1.2.
Well, it's the ratio combined with the context of the order. Is it a good thing to do? A required thing to do? What if you miss it? What if, as a one farmer, you picked one number, but someone else, you know, how far is that range? You know what I mean? What's the range of acceptability? And I think that's what a lot of people are kind of reading there as some of the challenges. Mm-hmm.
So let me just follow up really quickly in terms of the actual numbers, the 1 and the 1.2. Those were numbers suggested by the research group that we pulled together. Those numbers were not developed by staff. Staff was in that group and agreed with the development of those numbers, but that was based upon the research and the professionals that we worked with. The reason why strawberries are 1.2 is because strawberries are an annual crop. And so basically you have the nitrogen that you use throughout the process. Vegetables are in rotation, so you have the opportunity to use the nitrate left in the system into your next crop rotation. And so we're not accounting for that nitrogen that's left in the system. And so over a 3 rotation, a nitrate balance ratio of 1 is accommodating for the nitrate left in the system. So it's not a 100% efficient system. And that's based upon what the researchers told us.
What did the farmers, what comments did they give you about using ratios like that, the 1 to the 1.2?
There was no suggestion for alternative targets in the comment letters.
See, we do this type of work, right? Strawberry Commission jointly funded it. This is the exact type of work that farmers want to know. When it turns into a regulatory requirement is when everyone kind of says, hold on a second, putting a cap on my fertilizer, which is a major part of my formula, my recipe for when I get my plants to come early or late or hit certain market windows. Now you're really interrupting with what I do on the farm. And so that's where the big difference is. I think it's good work, but when it becomes the regulatory requirement, it's a real challenge compared to, like, the rubber dam, where that diversion from the rubber dam is going to take out 200,000 pounds of nitrogen out of the surface water drain. So there's more comprehensive ways that agriculture can remove nitrogen from the environment, prevent it from going into the bay, than just a simple cap. So I think if, you know, to the extent that that cap can be a guide or, you know, some sort of research or the type of thing that a coalition could work on, I think it's useful. It's just the more you take it to a regulatory number, an actual, here's the hard number, though, that's when it becomes challenging.
So are these ratio numbers, I want to use the word actionable, but, I mean, do they create the potential for a violation? If someone, Mr. Thomas, please, I hear you, but I'm asking the questions.
They are a target in table 5, I believe, of the order, which is a compliance target.
So somebody a farmer could potentially be in violation of that target.
The order requires growers to achieve this minimal loading within 3 years. It says that. Let me just move on to this slide. This is the slide that you saw from Dr. Hartz's work that he presented at the nutrient management meeting back in, I think it was last year. And this is for lettuce. And so in that middle column, you have what basically are the ratios. So you see a low average, in that example, of 0.5 and a high average of 2.8. What that demonstrates is that it is achievable and that some growers, on average, are fairly close. The average there is 1.5. The average of the lowest fields is 1.1. What I want to emphasize here is that it's a way for the staff and the water board to evaluate progress. We aren't trying to nickel and dime growers by saying you can only apply 1.1 or 1.2. What we know from the data is there's some growers who are at 4.0, 3.0. There are growers right now who are submitting this type of data to the water board under order, and we're seeing ratios that high. So what we're trying to do is to identify those real high ratios.
Well, can you do it by just making it a target and not be something that creates a violation?
We could move it to the milestone table. That's correct.
I mean, since there's a lot of variation, and this is going to be something new for them,
I mean, that is an option.
I don't see the need to have it be a violation immediately.
We could take that into consideration and move it to the milestone table. What I do want to say, though, is that this is the only target for groundwater. So this is the only indicator of a requirement to reduce loading. So in response to the very severe water quality conditions and the need to protect your groundwater, if we're trying to set a standard to reduce loading, this is the only thing in the order. We can move it. That is a possibility.
No, I understand what you're trying to do. I'm not in disagreement with it. I'm just trying to make it a little bit more maybe workable in the context of what the state of the art is on the ground.
So this is where the tile drains come in, because the tile drains are a mitigation to leaching. But they're not exempted. You're required to achieve the standard. So as the tile drain drains, then you have high nitrate in the tile drain. So it's a mitigation on groundwater, but it goes into the surface water. And then you have to reach the biostimulatory threshold, if I got that right. So that's 1/10 of the drinking water standard. So the tile drain has to be cleaner than drinking water on nitrate. But if the tile drain's in the right spot, like in the Baronda area, it goes to the recycling plant, and all that nitrogen gets removed from the environment. So that's where, you know, it's a more, there are solutions. We absolutely have to take nitrogen out of the environment, right? There's no question. We have to get a handle on the groundwater issues. But there are some more complex solutions that are out there that perhaps are not appropriate for the ag waiver, right? That they'll be worked out in other forums. Right.
Just to clarify, there's no standard that tile drains have to meet.
For surface water? There's no standard
There's no standard, no.
Okay. Mr. Johnston?
Yes.
Mr. Delgado?
I have one more.
Mr. Jeffries?
So one of the points that was made in favor of the ag alternative proposals today was that it would require many, many more farms to have a nutrient plan than the number of farms in Tier 3. And I really understand what we're hearing from staff about if this is the only measure, the concrete measurable thing in terms of limiting nitrogen to groundwater, which is supposed to be our highest priority. Okay, I understand why that's a very hard thing to say, fine, we'll just make it a milestone. My question is, so when you're talking about nutrient management plans in the ag alternative, what do they do? Is it just have a plan and whatever it is, it's okay? Or are there metrics that have to be met there?
So that would be developed, but this is the type of thing that would be included in the plan, including testing the soil and testing the water, so you know the total amount of nitrogen that's available. And the difference is, use agriculture. Embrace agriculture. Let agriculture work for you. That's the whole concept of the coalition, is that you get agriculture working on these things that, but as soon as you put them into a hard number, into a regulation, then you get just weird anomalies.
I understand that nobody likes to be told what to do, and farmers like it less than almost anybody. But I'm still trying to understand how this would work. So you're saying that there would be some sort of similar process with nutrient plans in the ag alternative. Now, would that be simply up to each individual farmer to figure out what that process is? And would there be some formula like this that the executive officer would have to approve? That's what I'm trying to get at here.
So as the coalition was developed, that would be something that would be approved as part of that process by the staff.
So what you're saying is there would still be something like that 1 or 1.2 number. The difference is that there would be farmer participation in developing it, but that essentially the board through the EO would still have to approve it. Is that correct?
I'm saying that's possible, yes. And that, yes, it's possible that you might get more folks participating than just Tier 3 right now. I'm not going to say there's going to be this huge rush for everyone to jump in.
No, I'm not asking who's going to participate. I'm trying to get a handle, because it's been all kind of squishy to me, mm-hmm. what the actual, who's approving what in the ag alternative process. And so I'm trying to get a handle on, and maybe I'm asking the wrong person, although part of the problem is who are we talking to. But I'm trying to get a handle on whether, in fact, under the nutrient plans under the ag alternative would end up with some measurable standards in terms of nitrogen nitrate loading.
So I think Tess wants to answer that question.
The concept with the ag proposal is that there would be, as part of the nutrient management plan template, something that looks definitely at these exact type of things, but it doesn't become the regulatory endpoint. It becomes a tool in order to evaluate what the individual farmers are doing. And go back and remember Mr. Los Hertos box plot in his report, and basically it would be taking this type of information and putting it into that box plot format to take a look at, to see where are growers at. Who is up there at the fore? That's who we should be going and auditing and doing the practice effectiveness evaluation, and we should be targeting to work with to make sure that they're making changes through that, using that box plot formula, but not as a regulatory input.
So let me see if I understand. Let me repeat back, and you tell me if I've got it right. What I hear you saying is that under the ag alternative, they would still have to be making some version of this calculation of nitrogen loading, but that there would not be, in terms of what you called a regulatory endpoint, there would not be a standard that they would have to hit. Everybody would make the calculation. Everybody would be somewhere on the, maybe in conceivably in the range we see on that chart of 0.5 to 2.8, and that hopefully over time that would go down. Is that correct?
That is correct, and also I would say, and with the input of the technical advisory committee to really determine for that individual farm and operation, have they appropriately managed their nitrogen and their nutrient inputs? Have they appropriately managed it based upon their site-specific information in order to determine if the ratio that they've hit is appropriate for their operation or not? Because that ratio has, is not a hard and fast for every operation. You have to consider it on a farm-by-farm basis.
Would it be? I understand it's going to vary farm-by-farm. Would it be appropriate then for a third-party coalition to have a weighted average target that overall the coalition would have to hit? Because our goal is to get the nitrate loading down.
And I would defer to Mr. Los Hertos as a technical advisor whether that'd be appropriate or not. I don't think I'm qualified to answer that.
But do you support his work? Because
Mr. Los Huertos, Dr. Los Huertos, is he speaking on behalf of Ag?
Why don't you let him?
Mr. Los Huertos, I believe, is speaking for himself.
Okay.
But Mr. Los Huertos, as he said, has done a lot of work with agriculture. And while we don't agree with everything he says, we do respect him and his technical abilities, and he's provided a lot of really good information. And I think that when we develop the technical advisory committee, we would look to Dr. Los Huertos to help with that technical advisory committee because of the technical information and knowledge that he has with respect to these issues.
How to put him in charge of it.
So one of the issues with nitrate leaching is that it's not just nitrogen in the soil, it's nitrogen moving below the soil. So it's easy to prescribe things like drip irrigation as a sort of a overall practice and say that's good, and that's a lower risk than maybe flood irrigation. But the problem is that if you mismanage your drip irrigation, you can leach just as much nitrate. So the part that's missing here, and that's the part that we can kind of, that in theory, the coalition approach can bring, is you don't just look at the nitrogen management balance, you look at the overall farm management plan in terms of a risk. So how well is the irrigator doing? Is the irrigator paying attention to soil moisture? Because nitrate leaching is a combination of nitrogen in the soil and the leaching potential in terms of water movement. And if the nitrogen movement isn't appropriately addressed in terms of irrigation, then all of the N to B, whatever the ratio is, nitrogen to crop, doesn't make any sense. It's a nice, easy category to select, but it actually has nothing to do with leaching, because leaching is a combination of multiple effects. So the idea, what we're trying to do, is bring a somewhat more subtle approach to be able to look at leaching from the whole risks that are associated with nitrate leaching, so it would be a much more robust, and I will say, probably require a little more effort by farmers, not in terms of reporting, but in terms of really paying attention to their farms. And the other thing that I have to say is that managing nitrogen on the soils is something that takes a lot of practice. And I would say this is generally true of all growers that I've talked to, is when did you figure out you knew what you were doing? About 15 years. Because the first 5 years, you didn't know what was going on, and every year was different in terms of rainfall. Then the next 5 years, you figure out you can actually make money. Then you actually feel like you know what you're doing. The problem is that you have so many different levels of where people are in that category that you really need a lot of work to handhold them through the nitrogen management process. In terms of, and again, missing, you may have a simple nitrogen balance approach, but if you don't measure the nitrification or the nitrogen generation with decaying organic matter, which can vary within the crop season, you may leach a lot of nitrogen in May when the temperatures of the soil, and you over irrigate that one time, but your nitrogen management, your nitrogen ratio balance is perfect. So what I'm trying to say, and what we're trying to address, is that it's way more subtle to manage nitrate leaching. And I fear that we're going to be using these budgets, and then we're going to come back and yank on growers and saying, you're leaching a lot of nitrate still. We need to lower that nitrogen ratio budget even more. And that's not the solution.
Dr.
Lowe's way more sophisticated.
If I can just try to get an answer to the question
that
Ms. Dunham punted to you. The question was, do you think that, I understand the it's different on every farm response to this nitrogen loading target, and I also understand what you're saying about irrigation. And I hear what staff is saying, that this is the only measure that we've got at this point that actually deals with nitrate loading. So my question to Ms. Dunham was, do you think if the it's different on every farm argument mandates, and we want to experiment with our creativity argument, mandates against individual standards, that it would be appropriate for a coalition in, or perhaps a sub-watershed area, to have an aggregate target, a weighted average target, that they have to, somebody has to be accountable somewhere here.
I agree, and I think actually that's a really good idea. I like that idea a lot, but it can't be all by itself. It has to be linked to the irrigation efficiency. It has to be linked to the other management practices. If you just pull that one piece out, you're you're creating a very flimsy house in terms of accountability and...
I understand
and
that, but I think the public and the board has to have some things they can look at to actually see what's going on.
And you know...
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Delgado.
Does the nutrient balance ratio, let's say it's 1.2 or 1.0, does that include the nitrate that's in the water that's being applied to the crop?
Yes, okay. It does.
Okay.
So the only thing it doesn't include then is the residual, if there is any, from prior crops.
That's correct, and that actually was in response to comments that we got from agricultural stakeholders. So the example that we were using as a model was the dairy order, Region 5, which does require growers to account for the residual.
Okay.
We do not do that in this order, and we've clarified that in the requirements.
Okay, so in layperson's...
What do you have, Mr. Thomas? Something you want to read to us?
No, I wanted to give you the citation so you could put your finger on this issue.
Okay. You guys, it's 10 of 8.
Oh, it's that early. Okay.
So
we've got more time now.
4 hours and 10 minutes.
The pool says we won't be done till 10.
No, that's not true.
I have 10:15.
Yeah. I like the energy of the new board members.
I don't know why you're looking at me.
You're holding the money.
What's your name again, sir?
Mine?
Yes. Is everybody been talking around you?
Rick Tomlinson, T-O-M-L-I-N-S-O-N.
Go ahead, I'll pick up where I left off.
Go ahead, Mr. Thomas. You get to...
The section that is at issue here on all this discussion, you can find on Table 3, entitled Schedule for Compliance, and it says Achieve Nitrogen Balance Ratio Target Equal to 1 for crops in annual rotation, cool season vegetables, by October 1, 2015. It is absolutely a compliance.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so great. Thanks for clarifying that. So in layperson's term, if I'm a grower of lettuce, I consider how much nitrogen I have in my water, so I guess I have to monitor my water to know that, because that counts, right? So I know how much nitrogen is in my water, and I figure out my soil type, and I tell the board, I tell the staff, I need this much nitrogen for my crop, given all of the conditions that I've considered. And staff looks at it and says, that looks reasonable. Okay, you've named your own target. Best wishes. We hope that you can, you know, hit it. And so the only thing that you're not accounting for, I'm not accounting for, is the residual. And that's wherein lies this debate about whether it's a one... It's 100% or not. And you're saying, staff, it's not 100% because we're not making you count the residual. So you actually get to apply more. Okay, so that's sort of the reason that we had that back and forth disagreement.
And you should say something, actually, instead of nodding your head.
Yes, sorry, that's correct.
Okay.
What was that?
You have to speak up so the reporter can hear what you're saying.
Okay, so at least I'm the grower. I tell you what I need. If it's justifiable, you approve it as staff, and I'm off my way doing what I do. And then I have different strawberry crops, and I decide that now my crop need for nitrogen is different. So I would probably go back to you and say, I'm doing something different than 3 months ago. I need more nitrogen. Or I need to bump my crop up because I'm not getting the yield I want. My need is higher than I told you. And then staff would probably say, okay, that's all right. Your denominator is now different. Go with that new denominator.
You actually report annually, so you don't need to tell us every single time. You just report at the end. And actually, I really want to emphasize that we do have growers right now who are already reporting this type of information. Monica has developed a spreadsheet right here. So I should probably blow this up, but down at the bottom are based upon, on the right-hand side, you have all the inputs, things like irrigation water, what you apply in compost, what you apply in pre-plant fertilizer. It all adds up. You have a total nitrogen applied, and you, the grower, submits the crop need, and then there's a ratio. So we have growers right now successfully submitting this type of information.
Okay. My last question is something that Dr. Lotz-Wertos referred to, that if you just look at this nitrogen balance ratio by itself, you're missing the big picture, and you'll be chasing your tail forever. And my question is, isn't it true that this whole ag waiver is looking at all of the different practices going on the farm? It's not just relying on that, but in this case, this is being used for a certain purpose of monitoring groundwater. But it's not isolated from everything else, the best management practices that are going on that are also in discussion.
That's correct. So in general, there's a farm plan requirement. It includes many elements, one of which is irrigation management and another which is nutrient management and on. And those are all practices. This is one indicator. And actually for the Tier 3 growers, the requirement is an irrigation and nutrient management plan. So part of it also is to demonstrate irrigation efficiency to make sure we're not deep percolating or having a lot of runoff.
Okay. Now, this will be my last question, I promise. If I tell you my crop need and you say okay, and I make my annual report, or somehow you find out that I'm applying more than my crop need, what kind of penalty or consequence do I face under the draft ag order?
Using the approach that we talked about, or that I talked about earlier in the day, we would initially contact the grower and talk to them about this information, and we would say, why is your crop need this high? What are the characteristics of your crop need? Because this seems way high.
Well, my example was that you find out that I'm applying a lot more than we agreed to. So I guess you would call me or email me and say,
yes.
What's up?
Yes. We would contact the grower and talk to them about it and try to figure out why, and then say, if it doesn't make sense and we don't think that it's appropriate, we would ask them to talk with and work with a certified crop advisor, and we could be included in that conversation so we can understand what is going on. So we would work with them to lower that amount per an expert, the advice from an expert. If they said, no, I don't want to talk to an expert, I'm going to do it my way, go away. Then we would go to the next step. We would send them a letter saying you're in violation and you need to come into compliance. So we would use this progressive process to get them to come into compliance.
Okay.
But it would be based on expert advice. So we would not make that call on our own. We staff.
Can I just add that we actually are doing this right now. So there isn't a target, obviously, in the current order. But we do have growers who are submitting in areas of impairment this type of information. And in this particular example, I know you can't read it, but I'd like to read it for you. This is a conventional strawberry grower. They reported 200, similar to what Rick mentioned, as the total crop need. And their total nitrogen supply that they reported themselves is 640. So they have a ratio of 3.2. We contacted the grower. We said, we need to figure this out and do more. And so that we're starting that process now, just as Mr. Thomas described.
So the penalty in that case is discussion and sort of cooperation to try to figure out what's going on.
The penalty is they have to talk to us.
What?
They have to talk to us.
I agree with staff in terms of the things that they talked about, irrigation efficiency, and that's much like the same thing that the coalition would do. But I think it'd be a little stiffer because it'd be, you got to get this in control or get it well documented, because it's either going to show up in your audit or we're going to have real problems.
But they're just looking for justifiable explanation for what appears to be an overapplication of nitrogen.
Right.
Which seems very...
Yes, and what we're saying is we think we can create the capacity through a coalition to have growers pay $1 million a year, $4 million a year, it all depends how many growers are in there, to have all those conversations, to do all that work, and then report it in the form of audits.
See, but the thrust of that is the proposed order doesn't preclude that from happening except for the reporting component.
Well,
and so the bulk of that is achievable with what staff is proposing.
Here, no. The proposed order gives you no regulatory credit. You're in Tier 3. You're in Tier 3. And go create a coalition. The SIP program, you get to be in the SIP program and you move down to Tier 1. But the language in the order is that, yeah, you can create a coalition, but there's nothing, I mean, after all the work that we've put forward and that's not sufficient, why would we somehow be sufficient 6 months from now or a year from now and all of a sudden our coalition be approved?
But the SIP program is a certification program. It certifies that you have achieved standards.
If you are a vineyard, I can show you a groundwater well of a small community surrounded by nothing but vineyards. If I make the assumption that use on top is affecting that community, you know, there's nothing in the SIP program that says those vineyards have to do anything extra. I can be in the SIP program and decide the pest pressure is so great I need to use chlorpyrifos and diazinon.
No, you cannot.
That's right, because then you're going to get kicked out of the SIP program. But you're still Tier 1 until you're kicked out. And you're not kicked out until whenever that next reporting cycle is.
The audit is every year. For SIP, it's every year.
Exactly.
Right? It's every year is a renewal, and every SIP certified vineyard is audited.
That's right.
Okay. Mr. Jeffries has, this is the last question, and it's a quick answer.
Yes, sir.
You've had almost 50 minutes.
Yes,
unbelievable
sir.
That this has happened, but it's important.
Thank you.
Mr. Thomason, you alluded to the rubber dam.
Yes.
But you didn't say what you meant by the rubber dam.
So the rubber dam is taking surface water.
Water. Which has got nitrates in it.
Which has nitrates in it, and diverting the surface water drainage from farms to the recycling facility. That recycling facility is then removing the nitrates. It's sending that water back to growers so that they're not using groundwater, and it's taking those nitrates out of the environment that would otherwise be discharged. Without the rubber dam, there'd be between 200,000 to 240,000 pounds of nitrogen being discharged to the end of the river and then into the bay. But because of that project, it's removing that much out of the environment.
Okay. Thank you very much for your comments.
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, just for the record, we disagree with that statement, but we don't need to get into it.
And that's fine, but with your comments tomorrow, I would expect that anything you've heard that you disagree with, that you're going to be alerting us to. So,
okay. Thank you.
All right.